Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Build Your Own Baby from Cosmos Magazine, August to September 2016. Build Your Own Baby, it's a moral imperative, argues Julian Savulescu. Sorry about pronunciation there, mate. Bylines. Homo sapiens evolved in the African savannas, reigned two short, difficult lives. Just a few hundred years, a blink of evolutionary time, we've transformed our environment as well as our odds of survival. In today's industrialized, globalized world, we live in to extreme old age. But this extended lifespan comes with its trade-offs. Our DNA is now out of sync with our environment. We can live for 8, 9, even 10 decades, while the use-by date in our DNA is closer to 40 to 50 years. This means people spend their latter years living with disease of aging, dementia, cancer, heart disease, arthritis, and osteoporosis. If our DNA is letting us down, why shouldn't we alter it to suit our environment? We've had the technology to manipulate genes since the 1970s. Legions of plants and animals have been genetically modified, but the technique was deemed too crude to apply to human embryos. Now, an extremely precise new technique known as CRISPR-Cas9 has blasted through that barrier. It is so much more precise that it's known as the genetic editing rather than genetic engineering. First introduced in 2012, it allows the cell's genome to be sliced and the genes be removed or added. CRISPR-Cas9 has transformed the art of genetic modification. It has also shifted what was for decades an unmovable ethical line in the sand. Since April 2015, Chinese scientists have twice carried out genetic editing on human embryos. While the researchers purposely used embryos incapable of maturing, they nevertheless opened the door to the possibilities. Once the technique is perfected, many wonder, will genetic editing be viable human embryos be inevitable? Some countries, including Australia, UK, and many European nations, ethical concerns have prompted restrictions or the outright ban of the use of CRISPR-Cas9. But others, such as China, have taken a more permissive approach to the technology. In the US, has become a major battleground in the ethical debate over CRISPR-Cas9. In March 2015, a number of US researchers, including those employed by private companies who are testing gene editing as a treatment of diseases such as HIV, hemophilia, sickle cell anemia, and cancer, called for a moratorium on the genetic editing of human embryos. A month later, Francis Collins, director of the US National Institute of Health, proclaimed the agency would not fund the research that was viewed as almost universally as a line that should not be crossed. At the end of that year, an international summit was held in Washington, co-hosted by the US National Academy of Sciences and the US National Academy of Medicine, the Royal Society and the Chinese Academy of Sciences. The participants came to a different view, why they held that it would be irresponsible to proceed with any clinical use of germline editing. They did not push for a moratorium on the research. Instead, they concluded that as scientific knowledge advances and societal views evolve, the clinical use of germline editing should be revisited at a regular basis. The moral line of the sand seems is now indistinct. This debate may soon come to a neighbourhood near you. Ultimately, it's not the scientists, but members of the public and the political representatives who determine what laws and regulations are needed. In Australia, the question is, should we allow the research to happen here? And does this new tool send us down the slippery slope to a world where all babies are engineered? Another consideration, genetically edited embryos could pass on their edited DNA to future generations. Do we have the right to consign all future generations to our current idea of what an ideal DNA code is? Precision genetic editing was catapulted to us to the threshold of Gattaca-like world. Now we have to decide to take the next step. By any measure, it will be fraught with a fraught decision. The perils of genetically engineering babies have been well articulated. They range from potential for creating genetic elite to the unpredictability of long-term effects of altering DNA in our species. That's why genetic editing of embryos has been seen as a moral no-go zone for four decades, but some ethicists are now changing their minds. Oxford-based, Australian-born bioethicist Julian Savescu, who's written this article, I think. Okay, well, that's strange. Surely you'd... it is the person, the author of this article. An advocate for procreative beneficence, which holds that parents should select the best child they could have based on the best available information. He believes the technique is an ethical imperative. Here, in his own words, Savescu makes his case. God. The human animal is not some finely balanced masterpiece of divine creation. It's the result of natural selection under particular environmental pressures. Human exhibits some 250 genetic disorders. Only 20 to 25% of embryos are fit enough to develop to a baby. And 6% of newborns exhibit a major birth defect. DNA manipulation allows us to correct genetic aberrations and enhance the human genome. It allows us to liberate ourselves from biological constraints of evolution and move towards the state of self-designed evolution. There are six ethical principles that obligate us to embrace human genome engineering. 1. Reduce human suffering. Whether this is a single genetic disorder like cystic fibrosis or multi-gene disorder like schizophrenia, inherited disease causes great suffering. It's also creativity and or whatever. I disagree. Gene editing could theoretically repair these faulty genes. In April 2015, Yun Hong and colleagues Sun Yat-sen at the University of Changzhou, China, attempted to use CRISPR-Cas9 on embryos carrying a blood clotting disorder of beta thalassemia, which I've got, my mate. If the technique is safe, there is a moral imperative to use it. In the same way, there is an ethical obligation to alleviate the suffering of a person born with hemophilia. Most of the disease receive regular infusions of a clotting factor their entire lives. Oh, that's really bad, because that thalassemia is just sickle-shaped blood disease. It makes you immune to malaria resistance. Okay. There is no morally relevant difference between treating hemophilia with drugs and restoring the function of that gene while the person is still in an embryo. Okay, I think, okay. We should treat gene editing as we would do any other medical intervention. Some people argue that gene editing of human embryos is unnecessary, since parents can directly use vitro fertilization to select embryos that do not carry genetic disorder. But that argument fails for three reasons. First, selecting embryos requires that the parents are able to produce sufficient numbers of embryos to select only the healthy ones, but 16% of couples produce only one embryo. A genetically impaired embryo may be their only choice. Okay. Right. Secondly, I don't know whether this is second, when it comes to multi-gene disorders such as schizophrenia, there is never going to be enough embryos to select those with the healthiest combination of genes. For instance, in a disorder that involves the dysfunction of 15 genes, it's estimated it would take thousands of embryos to find those few which has a healthy combination of gene variants. Oh dear. Genetic editing, including CRISPR-Cas9, has a potential to correct multiple genes in a single embryo. Moreover, genetic selection is not a cure for a disease. It merely stops a person who would have that disease from coming into existence and allows a different disease-free person is born. Another argument is that the gene editing of embryos is unnecessary because gene therapy can be carried out on people with a disease. Genes for particular organs or tissues are treated, say, the lung of a person with cystic fibrosis. But so far, the success of gene therapy has been extremely limited. No such treatments for cystic fibrosis exist. Despite decades of attempts, gene editing is a potential to cure every cell of the disease permanently. Point 2. A fairer way to spend medical resources. In some cases, we can effectively treat genetic diseases with existing methods, but those treatments are extremely costly. In a world of limited resources, excessive spending on one disease means that there's less to spend on other diseases. Fairness requires we choose the most cost-effective option. Take Gaucher's disease, for example, which affects babies born lacking the enzyme needed to break down fatty substances called sphingolipids. As a result, they build up. In the liver, the spleen, nervous systems, and bone marrow, interfering with normal function of these organs. It's possible to treat the disease with especially common in Ashkenazi. I believe this is an unfortunate name. Ashkenazi Jews, by giving a modified form of the missing enzyme via intravenous infusion every 2 weeks. But it's very expensive. In the UK, the annual cost is around $18 or $31 million Australian. Such treatments are lifelong. Correcting the fault in the embryo through the gene would cure the disease in a single hit and would be far less expensive. I estimate the cost. I estimate the cost would be in the range of $8,000 to $18,000 in total per person, compared to near on $1 million for 3 years of treatment. Okay. Carriers of genetic diseases like Gaucher's, which affects 500 Ashkenazi Jews, one in 14 are carriers, would likely know their status and opt to have IV tests and genetic health to test the genetic health of the embryos. But all the people have the opportunity to produce the healthiest embryos. The entire population would need to have babies using IVF to enable genetic testing and editing. So wouldn't this raise the cost to an unsustainable level? Not in the long term. I predict that within 20 years, the effectiveness of IVF vastly surpasses natural reproduction, and the cost of reading an entire genome plus the majority of births in developed countries will occur through IVF. What? Embryos will have their genome read, and the best embryos will be selected, and they will be increasingly edited. Okay. Point 3. Edit our DNA to match our lifespan. The global population is growing. In 1950, 1 in 20 were over the age of 65. In 2050, the figures are predicted to be 1 in 6. People are also living to a very advanced old age. In developed countries, the lifespan is over 80 years, and those in the less developed world are catching up. So far, graphs show no slowdown. Lifespan increases about 2.5 years every decade. But with aging comes Alzheimer's disease, heart disease, cancer, osteoporosis. The world's medical systems are buckling under the weight of this burden. Diseases of aging could possibly be delayed by arrested using gene editing. Gene associated with cancer, dementia, heart disease, and bone density are known. Mice have already been genetically engineered to resistance and decay and delay aging. Genetic short straws. Nature is biology's lottery. Some are born healthy, others are dealt painful, abbreviated lives. The prospect of genetic inequality are at the heart of public concern about genetic editing. While we may legitimately worry about the creation of genetic masterclass, we should also be concerned about those who draw the short genetic straw. The US Department of Education has estimated nearly 50% of the population lack the literacy to enjoy the rights and responsibility of citizenship. This is largely social, but partly genetics. My godfather, I'd be shot if I said any of this. Okay. We already accept that the society we need to intervene to help the short changed by their biology. What? So do we do so with remedial education, diet, and social support. Why not use gene editing to even the playing field? My godfather. Okay. If genetic editing were targeted at natural genetic inequality, it would reduce rather than increase inequality. Discover cures. People worrying that gene editing will be used to benefit the richest, not the neediest, but gene editing of human embryos could benefit all of us by giving us a greater understanding of human development and disease. To that end, last February, the UK Human Fertilisation and Biology Authority licensed a research team at London Francis Crick Institute to carry out gene editing on embryos. The experiment aims to discover how a particular gene called OCT4 influences the embryo's development. The research may reveal why IVF often fails and ultimately improve IVF success rates. This would reduce, not increase, inequality. Six. Human enhancement. In April 26, a second Chinese group led by Yong Fan of Changzhou Medical University attempted to engineer HIV resistance in human embryos. Their goal was to replicate a naturally occurring human genetic variation in the gene called CCR5. People with two copies of this genetic variation are completely resistant to HIV infection. This experiment showcases how gene editing could be used to protect populations that are highly at risk and contracting HIV, such as those in sub-Saharan Africa. Extending our imagination a little further, if there is a mass bioweapon attack or catastrophe climate change, natural evolution will be too slow to reconstitute a resistant human population. Like the dinosaurs, they would likely become extinct. The ability to genetically enhance embryos is the insurance policy for human survival. We also need to consider our moral fitness. We live in a world populated by... Okay, I'm going to continue to read this after a break, and I'll check whether my append file, automatic append file software works immediately. Now, this is an amazing article. It's just beyond me amazing article. I suppose I'll say a few comments at the end. We also need to consider our moral fitness. We live in a world populated by 70 million psychopaths. 1%, I've got my mind as a boss. 1% of the population. If a small percentage are technologically savvy or have access to wealth and power, they could inflict great harm to society. Genes that control antisocial behavior are well known. For instance, the so-called warrior gene, first identified in a Dutch family whose violent members often wound up in prison, is a maturation in the gene called mutation in a gene called MAO-A, which controls the levels of neurotransmitters in the brain. We don't have to look to deviant behaviors for examples of potential benefits to human gene editing. When it comes to ordinary population, altruism and concern for others is in short supply. Researcher Wojciech Kubot and colleagues reported that Americans value the life of non-Americans at just 0.5% of their compatriots. In the US and Europe, anti-migrant immigration parties and policies are bringing our xenophobic tendencies into high relief. Our DNA is partly responsible. We've evolved to be tribal rather than global citizens. If these xenophobic genes could be identified, it may be possible to do away with the trait. As I have argued in my book, Unfit for the Future, my godfather, co-authored by Ingmar Pearson, we have a moral obligation to bring about radical enhancement of ethical aspects of our own human nature. My godfather. Other objections. There are, of course, grave, well-founded concerns about safety. As two Chinese experiments show, gene editing is not really for clinical use. Percentage of embryos that received any editing at all was only 15%. And of these, many incurred errors. Edits were placed into the wrong part of the DNA, and the embryo did not receive the uniform editing of the DNA in all its cells. That means not all tissues would receive the benefits, a major problem if the embryo is being edited for HIV resistance. Given these tissues at present, gene editing should only be used in research to refine the technique. One law that mandates this is the UK Human Fertilisation and Embryology Act. it only allows embryos to develop until 14 days. If the gene editing were to be used to cure a disease in the embryo, it should first be attempted in a disease that is lethal in early life where there is no treatment, such as a severe form of OTC deficiency, a rare genetic order which ammonia accumulates in the blood. The accuracy of the gene editing could be tested in the embryo prior to implantation and tested again in early pregnancy. My God, why don't you do it on animals? My godfather. Another objection some ethicists is that gene editing goes against the free will since it involves one person desiring another. There is another problem that embryos cannot consent to such life-changing interventions. But if it's impossible to get consent, consent is irrelevant. What? The embryo can neither be asked to be edited or to be left alone. As moral agents, we must make some of those ethical choices. As far as freedom, genetic illness drastically reduces it. Take cystic fibrosis. Those who suffer from disease spend most of their lives in hospitals. If we had a drug that would cure cystic fibrosis on one day of life, we would administer it. Gene editing merely involves curing disease at day zero. It increases freedom. The evils of eugenics. Isn't it just what the Nazis would have dreamt about? Eugenics, per se, is not an evil thing. The traditional part of the Nazi eugenic was it was coercive, designed to achieve a racist society. It was based on bad science. Modern ethical eugenics involves free choice by parents, is aimed at achieving health and well-being of a child, and is based on good science. The Nazis also used sterilization to achieve the goals, but we haven't banned sterilization. We use it in a regulated ethical way. Embryo editing is passed on to the next generation. A major concern about editing the DNA of embryos is that the changes will be passed on to future generations. Many have argued that we cannot predict the long-term consequences. In some cases, we don't know the consequences for individual who harbors a modification for their entire life. We also don't know the consequences for the human population. For example, if a gene that appeared to cause some harm to an individual actually protected them from an epidemic, i.e. beta thalassemia. For instance, people who carry a single copy of single cell anemia are more resistant to malaria. It comes down to a case-by-case basis. In the case of a fatal genetic disease like cystic fibrosis, where the affected embryo carries two copies of the flawed gene, the consequences for the person is clearly positive. For cases where the merits are less clear, we need to wait for rapidly developing science and genomics to reveal consequences for genetic editing. Of course, there are risks of anything in life. We are constantly modifying our genome unintentionally, but smoking, drinking, plane travel, sun exposure to virus, even delayed parenting. If it's okay to damage the genome, why isn't it okay to repair it? If it's okay to repair it, why isn't it okay to enhance it? Conclusion. Many will disagree with me, the great potential of genetic editing to prevent disease and the ethics of using it on embryos to achieve this goal. Drawing the distinction between editing embryos for research purposes and reproductive purposes will allow us to debate the issue without impeding research in the meantime. All things considered, manipulation of the DNA is an ethical imperative. And he's Julian Chavescu, an ethicist at the University of Oxford. Well, look, my only point here is that this particular person introduced himself in the third person, but was the actual author. I really don't think it's an issue which you can actually go through the 6 points in a linear fashion like that. It's a complicated thing. I just don't think it's actually argued or managed very positively, but that's my overall opinion. Thanks for listening.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.